This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and I'm playing with food. Tariffs. We've been hearing a lot about them lately, but why would the Playing with Food team, whose remit is to report on the foods of the Central Coast, be interested in tariffs? Well, first, let's hear from world-renowned economist and former Secretary of Labor, Robert Reich.
Tariffs are effectively taxes on imported products, which we ultimately pay. Say there's a 60% tariff on Chinese imports. When Walmart imports Mr. Coffee machines from China, which is where they're made, who pays the tariff? Not China. Walmart pays the United States government. For example, if Walmart buys a coffee machine for $20, the 60% tariff means they'll pay an extra $12 in taxes, bringing their total cost to $32 per machine. And if Walmart is paying 60% more, do you think they will cut into their profit margin and absorb that cost? Of course not. They'll pass it on to you. Plus, American manufacturers import a lot of raw materials for products they make, so their prices would go up too. So when you're paying more for groceries, gas, and housing, know where your money is really going.
Well, that was helpful. Where is my money going when I buy locally grown vegetables, locally produced beer, wine, and cider? I wonder if the recent tariffs have had any impact on the locally grown and produced foodstuffs along the Central Coast. So I gathered five local producers who have been featured on Playing with Food in the past and asked them what this tariff stuff is about. We gathered at the Hub on a quiet afternoon, and you'll hear the sounds of a working brewery and pub in the background.
I'm Brian Talley, and I'm the owner of Talley Farms and Talley Vineyards.
George Peterson, Central Coast Brewing, The Hub.
Britton Traub, Marketing Manager at Slow Food Co-op.
I'm Maggie Probilski. My wife and I own Two Broad Cider Works.
Also contributing is Josephine Lockhead from Cook's Vanilla in Paso Robles, who sent us an email about the impact of tariffs on the vanilla industry.
We're here to talk about tariffs and how they impact the food and drink industries on the Central Coast. First of all, what is a tariff?
So a tariff is a tax on foreign goods that are brought into the country or leave the country.
Both ways, yeah. Yep.
But three of you, your products are domestic. You make them right here in San Luis Obispo.
Right. We make, the final product is finished here. So the brewing industry, everything's global. We get New Zealand hops, we get hops from Germany, we get grain from Canada, we get merchandise from China and Taiwan and Vietnam. It truly is a global community. Do I want the high desert hop? No, they don't make a high desert hop. You know, there are certain places you can grow hops, there are certain places you can grow grain.
Well, Talley Farms and Talley Vineyards, you grow your stuff here, and Maggie, I've picked apples with you out.
Yes, the orchard that we manage is out on Monty Road. So we also buy from a lot of other producers, but mostly we are local California apple. That's what we're using for our cider. But we do need to package that into something. Bottles, aluminum, shipping boxes. Just top of mind, those are the things that we are seeing an increase due to tariffs, and that means we have to raise the entire price of our product because we do need to count for that in the packaging of our product.
You grow your stuff here?
We do, and I would say the vast majority of our cost is associated with the raw product, but we do rely on bottles. They're starting to now manufacture bottles in the United States, and that was something that was happening even before the advent of the tariffs. There's no alternative source to imported corks. We also rely on French oak. Even though there is oak that's produced in the United States, it just doesn't work for our product. So no matter what, we have to rely on that.
You know, we do want to use domestic producers as much as we can for our packaging, but there's either not the manufacturing here, and in the case of bottles, they're still more expensive when they're produced in this country than they are with tariffs abroad. So we still have to increase the price of our product regardless of if we're getting domestic bottles or foreign bottles.
Britton, you said you buy all of these products here, right? From the three producers sitting around this table at the co-op, you're buying locally, so how are the tariffs affecting the co-op?
Because we're owned by the community, we have a really interesting way to operate. Other grocery stores may push the pricing over to the customer. We really try to not price gouge our customers, so sometimes we'll eat the cost or we will change our margins. So if there's an increase on a shelf-stable item or a local item, we'll shift the pricing so we can keep local items and other goods at a reasonable cost. and shift it to somewhere else in the store for something that people may not buy as often, so we keep our margins around the same. The distributors are eating a portion of that cost. Mexico and Canada were originally like kept out of the tariffs. There's certain products like bananas, eggs, avocados, and other things, but we're really lucky to live on the Central Coast where we can get a lot of that locally. So we're not seeing as large of an increase as most people assumed we would.
Okay, what about the farm?
We do produce avocados, and interestingly, avocados were higher in the spring, and the market has declined a little bit. I think it's very dynamic where there's a lot of supply right now that's coming out of California that's depressing the price. But there was a thought that we would have extremely high prices on avocados, and we're not seeing that just yet. We export spinach to both Mexico and Canada. That's really been unaffected by the tariffs. Whereas with wine, Canada made a very specific decision that they would stop buying California wine.
And
it
beer.
Was, yeah, very political, and I think bourbon too.
Alcohol.
Yeah.
Everything produced in the U.S. was literally banished.
And I think it was easier for them to execute that because those items are purchased through state store systems, whereas you're dealing with individual distributors and brokers on the
and
produce.
It was
side.
Very, very surgical. I mean, it was, I would say, within a 4 or 5 day period.
Right.
We got the notice that they will no longer be accepting orders, and then here's the shipping order for the order that was already placed that's sitting in the warehouse that we're not going to take. So we actually got $4,500 of the beer back.
But you had to pay for it to come back.
I did not.
Oh, okay.
They paid for the shipping. Annually, we do probably $10,000 or $12,000 out of country. It's not a huge amount, but something we produce for. Packages are different. The SKUs are different. It's designed for export. It's not like you just pivot and go to a different package in a different language now.
We haven't exported wine to Canada in several years, but one of the implications of shutting off that market is that all the other people that were exporting to Canada now need another place to go with their product. So it's just exacerbating excess supply in the market, which is bad.
Yeah.
This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian, and the Playing With Food team is exploring the impact on the on-again, off-again tariffs on the food and drink industries on the Central Coast. The four around the table who produce everything locally just shared the basics of the impacts of the tariffs. Josephine over at Cook's Vanilla imports all of her primary product. Vanilla is not grown in the United States. She says, in April, for reasons that remain unclear, a 47% tariff was imposed on imports from Madagascar into the U.S. Placing tariffs on Madagascar imports was unexpected and baffling. Madagascar primarily exports agricultural products that cannot economically be grown in the United States, while importing very little in return, as the impoverished nation cannot afford most American goods. The trade balance is not something that tariffs can or will correct. We were impacted by a couple of shipments en route from Madagascar. We rerouted the shipments to England to avoid the tariff when it was announced, 5 days later, that the tariffs were reduced to the baseline 10%. It was frustrating and caused interruptions in day-to-day business operations, the way the tariffs were instated and then retracted with very short notice. Let's continue the conversation around the table.
With exception of the farms, the vineyard, the brewery, and the cidery are all small producers, so you probably didn't have a lot of your imported products in storage, so you could use up the backlog before you had to pay more. Is that right?
That is, but I just ran out of all my shipping boxes, and I definitely saw a very high increase in cardboard.
Cardboard has been across the board, and we don't use cardboard boxes for the cans, but we use the packing shipping tray, and it's gone up like 15 cents a piece. We go through 900 in a canny, you know, 97 to 100 bucks, you know, in the margin of pennies, and that adds up fast.
I'm saving all my glass cartons. I'm finding other boxes from the co-op sometimes to give my club members their shipment. I can't buy the 6-bottle carriers anymore for the bottles because they're like $4 a piece.
We talked about food at the co-op, but what about supplies?
Cardboard, ink, the stickers, that's where the price is coming in. Yep. So anything
labels.
That's labels, yeah. So the pricing of labeling is going up.
Damn.
Coffee too. That was one of the main products where a couple of our vendors reached out to us and are like, okay, we'll have to do a little bit of an increase on the price because there's the tariff. tariff on it. But the majority of the cost is coming from the packaging, not the product itself. Yeah, if you need boxes, you can always come to the co-op to pick up extra boxes, give it a second life. Yeah, we get deliveries twice a week, and we have tons of extra cardboard.
That's a good thing about being local, is that you can say things like that. You can turn to another supplier and say, oh, we got extra cardboard boxes. That's great. Labeling, you're talking about labels on the shelves, whereas you're talking about labels on your bottles and cans and your bottles, right? So I'm assuming that people, the general public, haven't even given a thought to the increase in labeling. How much more can a little label cost?
I don't know, but the folks that I get my labels printed up in Paso, I'm going to call them and be like, so, what are tariffs doing to y'all? And then I can tell you later.
Well, we just order labels. Most of our stuff is either digitally printed right on the can or sleeved on the can. So all of the printers that we use in pallets, minimums are 3,000 cans, 6,000 cans, multiples of 3,000. 3112, actually. It used to be anywhere from 19 to 21 cents a can with a label. And now they have broken out the can package by itself and the labeling cost, because they source the labeling cost, whether it's the sleeve or the ink or the digitally printed part. So the inked digitally printed ones have gone up 12 cents a can. The ink has been substantial. So what was 21 cents a can 4 months ago is now 32 cents a can. A label by itself was, again, 16 cents to 21 cents, depending on how it was made. Now they're 31 to 35 cents a label. So I just ordered labels this morning, and they're 35 cents a piece. So that's 10 cents per package twice.
So I just want to make clear, that's all due to tariffs. It has nothing to do with inflation.
The inflation, we already had the inflation bump earlier last year, and then it kind of subsided, actually. Mm-hmm. Things kind of came down there. October, November,
bit.
And then they stabilized, I'd say, in January, sort of, and then it was like, boom. We ordered glass in February that should have been there, first week of March, should have been there for our anniversary party, so I had a two-week window. Those are shipping tomorrow, because they didn't want to gaff us. I mean, to their credit, this was six pallets of glass that would have cost us 145% more the day that it was gonna ship. Now it's back down to 10%, so it's still up 10%, which we are absolutely taking. He's taking some of it, and that was a contracted, we made it for George stuff before even he was president, and now, you know, 6 months later, so we're 4 months behind on the glass, and it's gonna cost us 20 cents a glass more.
Wow. Josephine at Cook's Vanilla also has packaging issues. She says, our packaging and ingredients cost have increased 10 to 50% in price due to tariffs. This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian with a local winemaker, a beer maker, a cider maker, a vegetable farmer, and a grocery store marketeer, with a vanilla producer contributing via email, discussing the impact of the tariffs on the food and drinks industries on the Central Coast. Josephine at Cook's Vanilla also touched on the uncertainty amid all the erratic changes, saying, there are difficulties that arise when there is little notice of a new tariff policy and then operating with an unknown future tariff policy. We still do not know whether the tariffs will be reinstated, which makes it difficult to project purchases. The group around the table elaborated on that.
I think the thing that I would emphasize with the tariffs that George just started to touch on is just the chaos of trying to plan for anything.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the part of it that has been very disruptive. People just start canceling their orders. We work with wine distributors all over the United States that have big import businesses. Proactively, they started buying a whole bunch of wine, imported wines, to get ahead of this. So they used all their budget to buy imported wine, so they had no money left to buy my wine.
Stuff, right?
That basically means that their sales reps are focused on selling all this inventory that they have. So there's just been, I think, a lot of very unintended consequences, very, very unpredictable, very, very chaotic has been the general theme since all of this started.
Yeah, the unpredictability makes it so very hard to make a plan and to budget for your entire year. It's constantly changing.
We are currently, for the first time in 28 years, at least the last 15 years, we're out of Monterey Street Paler.
I know. And I tried to get one yesterday.
Yeah. You and everybody else. I have an order pending online. The guy says, well, I didn't see it on the thing, so I thought I'd call you. And I says, no, we actually are out. And he goes, how come? I said, well, because in January, when I ordered my grain from Canada, they held it, and it's a fresh product. They do all of the bag conditioning, and they sit on it. So you get a bag and then you use it. You don't store it. Weevils, bugs, mice. I mean, I can't store a warehouse full of grain. And so we made a conscious effort because it was only going to be for a minute to not make Monterey Street. Well, once you bump a tank, that tank's full. So you can't just squeeze a Monterey Street in there for a couple nights and then pull it out and make beer with it. It's 19 days of tank space. It's 22 days of ordering the stuff. It's 3 months of ordering the can. So what we stopped ordering in January now is hitting itself full on first week of June. So we got through graduation, thank God, but pretty quick, you know, we're going to be out of juice box again. We haven't made peanut butter in a while. So all of these beers that we've pretty much come used to having, we're behind. So then my distributor, just like he was saying, makes a different decision. They need Lucky Day, and now they get Topa Topa, or they get Firestone. They replace it. They're not going to stop selling IPA because George is out. They're just going to find a different IPA.
The internal competition is getting worse.
So somebody who has an imported French wine and right next to his Chardonnay, oops, we don't have Tally anymore, but we've got Jummy's Chardonnay. Oh, well, this isn't bad. It's not as good as my old, but they still got their wine. They're fine. So the end result is this U-turning from us all the way through the consumer cycle. Why are these people having to make all these decisions? Why are they having to deal with the chaos at their end as much as we are? And it's like planning and organization and inventory controls and stuff like that are just out the window. That's not how you run a business. When you're down here growing the apple and you're up here drinking the apple, 65 things can affect that.
Despite the chaos and costs, there may be a silver lining to all of this. Don't get me wrong, we all could do without the chaos and the climbing costs, but there's a tangible Central Coast element to all of this.
Playing with food is for the Central Coast, and we're a pretty tight-knit community. What do you want people to know?
I want them to be hopefully patient with us if we do have to raise our prices. This is unfortunately where we are right now. Bring back your boxes, please. They are very useful and they are very expensive. They are gold. Ride your bikes more so you can buy more cider.
And supporting us as a team, and you know, we support Tally, we support you, you support us. I mean, there is this triangle that is so self-fulfilling, I guess, that we do watch out for each other, you know, and if a brewery needs something, if a winery needs something, if a cidery needs, there's always something extra we can help. There's all this intrinsic Central Coast, you know, bond or love or whatever you want to call it, that makes us just that one step better than the average corporate environment. And we deal with the locals, we deal with the big guys. We all have to pivot. We've been pivoting now consistently since COVID.
In these tariff times, definitely support local when you can. And if you can't get out to their businesses directly, do come to the co-op because we try to make strong partnerships with all of our local suppliers. And there's power in working with your local community. And also just do the research and learn more about it, because I think a lot of these costs are unpredictable, but also it's subtle. Like if you think about the ink or the packaging, like when you look at that, recognize that these people around the table sitting with me are hardworking people of your community who are taking that cost and having to create the product that you love. They don't want to raise the prices on you. They're not doing this to like price gouge you. They're suffering. Be kind to them, be patient, and there's power in like supporting your neighbor.
We're already strained by all the inflation that we've had, and all of the money that we may have had saved before the pandemic has been eaten by the pandemic and eaten by the new economy that has emerged out of that. So we're already strained. And then to add these extra costs on is a further strain and further adding to our stress. The more stress we have, the less spoons we have to deal with everything else.
Is there by any chance anything positive about the tariffs that are affecting the food and drink industry on the Central Coast that we can go out on?
My standpoint is finding the friends in the neighborhood, in
the community.
Of the Central Coast here, and recognizing that we're all in this together, and so we're going to support each other and we're going to do anything in our power to help each other out. I think that is really coming through. When the customers know this and we know this, then it makes us really stronger together.
And that's why we love living on the Central Coast. So when your next veg box is a bit higher, when your Central Coast Cider Trail weekend is more than you budgeted for, when your gold medal winning cookies suddenly cost their weight in gold, or when your favorite local beer is on hiatus, remember what Robert Reich told us at the beginning.
So when you're paying more for groceries, gas, and housing, know where your money is really going.
This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian, and I'm playing with food.